I was actually at some point feeling like she's not my baby. I was feeling like she was switched at birth, you understand? Like, I was given a baby who is not mine. I was also feeling like, yeah, I'm not the mother, and I never gave birth, and I was never pregnant in the first place. So I was feeling delusional about my baby and myself as well, and the people around me. I remember at some point I was seeing, it's like people are coming for me, they are chasing me, and they are calling me all sorts of names. You know, you are nothing, you are nobody, you deserve to die. Those voices and people I was actually seeing, but they were not there, I came to realize later on.
Hi, I'm Kim Chakaneta, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I untangle a single African story that matters. And if you have a story in mind that you'd like us to tell, or if you simply want to drop us a quick hello, you can reach us at thecomb@bbc.com. There is an almost universal belief that having a baby is a joyful, life-affirming experience. And it certainly can be that. But transitioning to motherhood can also be a much messier, more complicated process. In this episode of The Comb, how giving birth triggered a mental health emergency that caused Chibet to split from reality. And just a heads up before we get started, there are parts of Chibet's story that deal with suicide that some listeners may find upsetting.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
Chibet, how would your friends and family describe you?
My friends and family would describe me as an extrovert because I like to be with people. Someone who likes to laugh loud and love deeply. They would also describe me as someone who loves life. I mean, I live life to the fullest. I live today. I don't care about tomorrow or yesterday. I just want to live today. And it's sometimes...
Laura Chibet Berir is a Kenyan journalist based in Nairobi. And as you can probably hear, she's someone who lives life at full volume.
When I have money, I don't really think about tomorrow. I just want to spend all of it and, you know, YOLO. Tomorrow will sort itself out.
Her "you only live once" ethos and general zest extends to all aspects of her life, including her work as a journalist.
My most recent job was at the Standard Media Group. That's KTN News, Kenya. I was a TV presenter and reporter. So I was doing health and science reporting, basically.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, absolutely. I loved it, every bit of it. And it was a very life-changing experience for me. I was there for 3 years as a health and science reporter. And I can say that experience as a reporter really shaped my career. And I'm grateful for it.
Back in 2016, Chibet was about to finish university when she had her first big career break.
I had been given a show to do, a food show kind of, where I had to go around hotels tasting their foods and recommending them to customers who can go eat them.
But despite her excitement, Chibet felt a little off colour.
I slowly started realising that I actually am nauseous when I taste the food. And I was tasting different kinds of foods, and including foods that I had never tasted before. So I wasn't sure if it's just me not liking the food or the cuisine, the particular cuisine, or I'm pregnant.
It turns out it wasn't the food. A test confirmed it.
It was red. I remember it was a double red line.
Okay.
And I was like, shakes! No wonder.
And how were you feeling when you saw that double red line?
So I was like really conflicted. What should I do? And I was like, I really would love to have a baby because I love children. I love kids. And at the other end, I was like, I'm not ready for this baby. I mean, I'm not married yet. This is my boyfriend. And I've not graduated.
Chibet says it's not that she didn't want kids. It's just that she felt she had deviated from the clear blueprint she had been raised to follow.
And according to societal standards, you know, especially in when you're brought up in a Christian family or background, there's a certain particular way in which you should live life. Go to school, graduate, get married, and then get kids. But here I was pregnant even before I graduated. So I was conflicted at first. But when I called my boyfriend to inform him that, you know what, I'm expecting, he was like, that's okay, we will take care of the baby. And that made me change my mind completely and focus on now keeping the pregnancy and giving birth to my baby.
But before preparing to take on the mammoth task of motherhood, there is another daunting task to tackle: letting her own parents know.
It was really difficult. Apart from being brought up in a Christian family, you can imagine my mom is a teacher and my dad was a military guy. So it was easier with my mom. She took like 10 seconds and then she was like, it's okay, we will take care of you and the baby, don't worry. Now you're going to figure out on your own how to tell your dad, because I'm not going to tell him. So I gathered courage and I went to tell my dad. My dad was a military man. So when I went to tell my dad, you know, dad, I'm expecting, you know what he told me? He was like, okay, so what do you want me to do? Plain, those are the only words he told me. So what do you want me to do? I was like, I don't want you to do anything. I was just informing you. And I left the room because it was already awkward and tense. I was like, let me just, you know, I've done the hard bit, which it was to inform him. I'm not.
Chibet's dad eventually came around. Chibet was mostly relaxed about the prospect of motherhood. She had, after all, an excellent role model in her mother, a strict but loving matriarch who'd given her and her three siblings a solid and happy childhood.
Growing up, I'd say I'd led it was a simple life where, yes, I didn't lack anything, but also we were not given the luxuries of life. But it was amazing. I mean, the memories and the experience, my mom was always present for me and for my siblings. My dad wasn't always there because he was in the military, but we enjoyed the moments when he would come home. So my childhood and growing up was pretty much simple and fulfilling. That's how I'd put it.
How was your pregnancy?
My pregnancy, as usual, or for most women, the first 3 months were hectic. I couldn't eat anything. I was just eating oranges the whole time. I would eat like 10 oranges in a sitting, so cravings. Yeah, and then the second trimester was awesome. It was awesome because now the baby bump is showing and you get to skip queues, get special treatment from strangers. So it was awesome. But the third trimester, oh my God, I was like, get this baby out. I'm tired. I was so tired and exhausted.
When delivery day finally came around, Chibet and her partner welcomed a baby girl after 10 hours of what she describes as intense labor.
What were those first few days, weeks like for you?
Oh my God, the first time I gave birth to my baby, I was happy and elated. I mean, I love kids, and just to hold my own, it was amazing. It was an amazing feeling. And I, you know, in my head, I wanted to take care of this baby with everything that I have and in all ways that I can. But after a few weeks, 3-4 weeks, I can't remember the specific date, I started feeling different about my baby. I didn't really take keen interest in taking care of her, bathing her, or just how a normal mother would take care of her baby. I kind of lost that with time.
Chibet says it started with niggling feelings of uncertainty.
I started having self-doubt. Am I a good mother? Am I going to take proper care of this kid? Am I even in a position to take care of her? Because from what I feel and what is going on around me, I don't think I'm a good mother and I don't think I deserve this baby. slowly and slowly I started to withdraw.
At the time, she'd moved in with her in-laws in Eldoret, a town in Western Kenya. Her partner was working in Nairobi, about 6 hours away, so he'd go back and forth. Chibet says even though it was a warm, supportive environment, she was struggling.
Besides that, I was also feeling like I'm a burden to my in-laws and everyone around me. And slowly by slowly, I started having negative thoughts, which gave birth to bigger negative thoughts. Until I wasn't eating and I wasn't sleeping for days, about 3-4 days. And I wasn't taking a shower. And you can imagine if I wasn't taking care of myself, so I would not take care of the baby. I wasn't breastfeeding. And I wasn't actually bathing the baby and, you know, doing what a mother would do to their newborn baby.
Chibet says she'd sometimes sit somewhere and hours would pass. Simple daily tasks seemed momentous.
I just particularly didn't want to do anything at all. I didn't want to take a shower. I didn't want to change my clothes. I did not want anything to do with life and daily living, the things we do on a daily.
It's not uncommon for new mothers to experience postpartum blues, or baby blues as it's sometimes called, with symptoms like mood swings, anxiety, crying spells, and difficulty sleeping. But in Chibet's case, what started out as a low mood tipped into something much darker. And I should warn you that what she says next, some people may find upsetting.
I was feeling like I don't deserve to live. I'm a bad mother. I'm a bad person. I'm not a good friend. I'm a bad sister. I'm a bad daughter. Evil for that matter. So, and I don't know where these thoughts were coming from, because when I apologized to those people I felt I had wronged, they were like, no, you've not wronged me. I'm okay. What do you mean? So that feeling of self-loathing, that led to me wanting to die and to die with my baby, because whom am I leaving this baby with? So I felt like...
Chibet was unwell and needed help. Her mind was spiraling, rushing from one thought to another. And while for the most part those thoughts were internalized, there were one or two moments when she felt compelled to act. I won't go into any details other than to say it was around this time that arrangements were made for her to go to hospital.
What do you remember about being taken to hospital? What was that experience like of being hospitalized?
Mm-hmm. I didn't understand or know what I was feeling. I didn't know what I was going through with me. So definitely I was wondering, why am I being taken to hospital? I'm not sick. There's this perception that sickness has to be physical. So I was like, I'm not sick. You know, I was not talking, by the way, but in my head, I was like, why are they taking me to hospital? I think they were afraid that I would jump out of the car or something. So I remember my mother-in-law putting a child lock on my door, the side of my door.
Even the journey to the hospital was a fraught one. It came just before Kenya's general elections in 2017.
There were a lot of trucks and campaigns on the road. I think it was a coincidence, because I felt like now these people are talking about me. I would pick someone who had my father's surname and was vying for a political seat. So I would pick that name and tell my mind that that's me they are talking about, or it's my father and myself. We are cast as a family, and they're after us. They are coming for us. They want to kill us. And when I was taken to hospital, I actually refused to come out of the vehicle, and I had to be forced out by my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law. There were a lot of people in that hospital. So I started feeling like they're also following me to the hospital so that they can monitor me so that I don't run anywhere. So when it's time to jump on me and kill me, it will be easier. It really got me more paranoid.
Chibet remembers her mother and sister-in-law trying desperately to persuade her to follow the doctor's advice.
The doctors decided that they want to inject me with a sedative. I refused, because I also didn't know what was going on. So I was a bit defiant. I didn't want them to inject me, because again, I thought they want to kill me with the injection. I was in denial and I didn't understand what was going on with me.
Chibet Jibed would later learn that she was suffering from postpartum psychosis, a serious but treatable disease that affects 1 in 500 mothers after giving birth. I'm going to come back to Jibed's story and everything that followed. But to better understand what postpartum psychosis is about, I called up someone whose work focuses on the mental health of expectant and new mothers.
My name is Lavinia Lumu, Dr. Lavinia Lumu. I am a specialist psychiatrist. I work in South Africa, Johannesburg. I wear many hats. I work in.
Dr. Lumu is a lecturer and the president-elect of the International Perinatal Mental Health Society.
Postpartum psychosis is a very serious mental illness that can occur in women specifically. So the term postpartum refers to a duration after birth where a person who's just given birth could present with changes or psychosis, with where a person is not in touch with reality and may behave in quite an untoward manner in terms of acting on a world that is created in the mind due to hormonal changes where they see or hear things or have strange beliefs, delusions that they act on. And it's quite serious because it needs hospitalization in most cases.
Is there a period where it's most likely to occur? Is it a few days after giving birth, or can it stretch into months after giving birth?
The most vulnerable period after birth most commonly is the first 6 weeks after a person gives birth. And the reason why this period is extremely vulnerable is, you know, pregnancy is a stressful event physiologically. It's a stressful event. Imagine a uterus being the size of barely a plum to almost a watermelon, and all the physiological and hormonal changes that need to happen. And then all of a sudden, from that back to normal, the rapid decrease in the reproductive hormones specifically makes it an extremely vulnerable time for a psychosis to occur.
It is not known what exactly causes postpartum psychosis. What we do know is that certain people are more predisposed to it than others. People who already have a diagnosis of schizophrenia or bipolar, or people who have a family history of mental illness. In Jibed's case, she later made a connection between her illness and her grandmother's schizophrenia. It can also affect people with no previous history of mental illness. And the symptoms of postpartum psychosis, do they vary from person to person, or is there a common thread throughout?
The most important thing to be aware of is any mother who displays strange behavior. So typically with psychosis, a person could have hallucinations where they could hear or see things that aren't really there. So if that were to happen, you know, sometimes they act on what they see or hear, and this could be observed as strange behavior. Or they might have developed strange beliefs, which are not real, but to them, it feels real. It's basically like the mind tricking the person into believing that these things are there or these beliefs are there. But the important thing to be aware of is any sort of changes in a normal sort of behavior. So, I mean, new mothers do need support, as much support as possible.
Dr. Lumu says in most cases, patients will have to be hospitalized. Treatments can include mood stabilizers like lithium, antidepressants, and antipsychotics to help with manic and psychotic symptoms such as delusions or hallucinations.
The mechanism of psychosis is the brain cells producing too much hormones. So antipsychotics work to bring the excess production of these brain hormones back to normal levels. And in severe cases, if the psychosis is really severe, then we would then consider electroconvulsive therapy, which is shock therapy I know there's a lot of negative press around the use of shock therapy, but in severe cases, it's something that we do to get the mother out of the psychosis rapidly. It's done safely. It's not as dramatic as everyone thinks it is. So often we have to consider that in severe cases.
What the antipsychotic drugs did to me is they calmed my thoughts and brought me back to reality progressively, not in a spur of a moment. It took about 2 weeks. 1 week to get back to normal, and 2-3 weeks to really get back to normal.
And this ideally would be the end of the story. Chibet feeling normal. But as it often happens with stories about mental health, they are no tidy and quick endings. Chibet was starting to feel better and was now back home, but she was still feeling a little fragile. And so when some friends came over, it seemed to trip something in her again.
They actually surprised us. So I think the surprise triggered me, and I was still, you know, I was still healing mm-hmm. from the psychosis, and it takes a while, you know. I can't remember if I was still taking the meds, but again, progressively, I got psychotic, back to the same cycle of, I never gave birth to this baby. I think people are following me. They want to kill me. I don't want to die, but I don't want to live. I met my mom. I was actually even telling her, you are not my mother. Delusions. I was delusional. So I had not taken a shower for days. And she was like, you know what, Chibet, you need to take a shower. And she actually bathed me. That's my mother. Yeah. So she forced me to bathe and she bathed me. I remember every detail.
Chibet was again hospitalized, but this time around she was there for longer and was again put on a course of antipsychotics. After leaving hospital, she stayed with her mother and with time began to feel like herself again. Along the way, she started to better understand what her illness was about, what to look out for, and how to manage it.
It actually took me 2 years to process what I had been going through.
So you had your child, you went through this, and then you came out the other end. When did you decide to have a second child?
You know, when I realized I was pregnant for the second time, I was like, hi, I'm happy, because this is actually a prayer I made, even though I was not planning for this baby per se.
There was a question Chibet kept returning to when it came to her second pregnancy.
Will I be able again to take care of this baby considering what happened before?
Roughly 50% of women who've had postpartum psychosis will have it again after the birth of another baby.
So in 2020, we had our second child, but I got psychotic again.
And do you remember what was the first sort of clue to you that, oh, okay, this, we're back here again?
Yeah, now this time I was talking a lot. Remember the first time I was withdrawn and depressed? So this time it came as, we call it mania. It was a manic mood. So I was talking and thinking too much and too quickly. And I was feeling high and on top of the world. I was feeling like Jesus. Like I'm Jesus. Like I can save the whole world.
So what did that mean in terms of, what were you doing, Chibet? How did that color the fact that you thought you were Jesus? How did that color your behavior?
So I kept saying, you know, come to me, all you who are weary, I will give you rest. And so many words, you know, they were racing thoughts, and I was speaking too quickly. So whatever was on my mind, I remember the people around me were actually really, really shocked. And I think that is how my husband noticed, something is off and she needs help. And that was so immediate. It didn't take long for me to get treatment.
Enough time has passed for Chibet to be able to retell her story with ease and to even laugh at certain parts, like when she thought she was Jesus. But taking stock of what happened to her has not always been easy.
I started beating myself up at first. I was feeling very guilty, you know, why wouldn't I be there for my baby and I gave birth to her? How could I do that to her? Because I remember she would cry a lot when I refused to breastfeed her. So those instances kept coming back to me, and I felt guilty about them. But with time, you know, with the right support system and with enough reading and research, I learned that, you know, that was just that, and it happened, and it doesn't make me a bad mother. And so every day after that, I made a conscious decision to be there for my baby. And right now we have a good relationship. She's open to me. I'm open to her. And I think my relationship with my mother also makes my relationship with my daughter better. I mean, I want to be there for her like my mother has been there for me.
In total, Chibet had 3 psychotic breaks, 2 with her first child and another with her second. The fact that she knew nothing about postpartum psychosis going into her pregnancy has strengthened her desire to help other mothers and shatter the silence around postpartum psychosis, a disease that is often misunderstood.
It really touches my heart when I hear of a mother who has gone through postpartum depression and psychosis. That's why I feel like I'm going to start an organization that helps women going through postpartum anxiety, depression, and psychosis. And I think I'll also write a book.
It took time, but Chibet says she's now in a really good place.
I've never been better. I think it comes with self-awareness, where you know that anything could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've been through it twice, thrice, it could happen again. So I make my mental health a priority. I avoid all the triggers as much as possible. Mm-hmm. When I start to feel anxious or depressed, my husband really knows. He understands me. I thank God for my husband, because even when I don't talk, he will know something is wrong. He will also notice when I'm talking much more than usual. You know, we have meds in case of anything. That's what our psychiatrist advised us. Right now, I'm happy. I'm living a fulfilling life, if I could say. I'm okay.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you or anyone you know is struggling with a similar issue, details of help and support are available internationally at www.befrienders.org. Next week on The Comb.
I just woke up and said, when did I become this person? When did I become like a monster? How did I become this numb for seeing this? So seeing those toxic content again and again will affect you emotionally and mentally and physically, and you become someone you are not.
This episode was produced by me, Kim Chakaneta, Mary Goodhart, and Aisha Afra. Our sound design is by Rob Wilson, and Piers Lynch is our editor. Our studio manager is Barry Byrne. A special thanks to Dalitso D'Africande and the African Alliance for Maternal Mental Health for their help with this episode.